Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Spirits Podcast, episode 65, Inanna.
I can tell that you really like the new mics because you just spoke very sexily into the new microphones.
Oh my god, did I really?
Yeah.
I didn't intend to.
Episode 65, Inanna.
I'm like, fame has changed us. Yeah. And now I use my broadcaster voice.
Your broadcaster voice.
It's clearly. Very RP, darling. No, I've been listening to a lot of The Crown.
Checks out.
Yeah, yeah. Listening to, watching, I don't know, man. Media's a lie. I'm very...
So the episode.
I'm very red wine.
Yep. Very red wine.
And this myth is great.
Yes, it is.
I don't remember anything about
really?
It.
Okay.
Because we recorded it a week ago.
Okay.
And it's... Oh, now I'm getting some images. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. All right. It's good. It's good. It's good.
It is a good one. It's one of my favorites.
Don't worry. Also one of my favorites. Do you want to guess who?
Our patrons.
Our patrons.
Especially our new ones.
Yes. Welcome to Joseph, Sarah, Heather, James, and Danielle. And thanks, as always, to our beautiful supporting producers who would totally look badass walking into hell. Mm-hmm. Neil, Philip, Julie, Sarah, Christina, Josh, Eeyore, Sandra, Cammy, Lindsay, Ryan, Shelby, Lynn, Mercedes, Phil, Catherine, and Deborah.
You all wear the crown of heaven in our heart.
Mm. And to our legend level patrons.
Scepter of the sky.
Scepters of the sky for us and our hearts. Mm-hmm. Leanne, Ashley, Cassie, Ashley Marie, Bridge, and Shannon. Welcome.
We want to remind you guys again, we have some wonderful shows that we are part of a collective of podcasts with. So you probably heard us mention all of them at least once.
Yes.
If you are interested in Dungeons and Dragons, queerness, and like amazing storytelling that feature some of the creatures that we talk about on Spirits, you should check out Join the Party. They just wrapped up one of their campaign arcs, and it's a blast. They go to a place called Duven Boosters, and it's exactly as wonderful as you think it is.
Yeah, and you can go to jointhepartypod.com/recap. We made like a nice recap of the first 11 episodes. Yeah, that way you don't have to like listen to hours and hours of stuff if you want to jump in. Mm-hmm. But it's really good. I co-host it. I play a like lesbian skater teen, and it is the funnest, like, just storytelling with buds,
that other people
can participate in. And Julia, you this week are also guest starring on another Multitude show.
Yes.
Potterless.
Potterless is the story of Mike Schubert, who is a 25-year-old man who's reading the Harry Potter books for the first time. And
it's
listen,
precious.
as Will Williams said today on Twitter, if you love Harry Potter and also joy, you should listen to Potterless.
I know. Whether you have read Harry Potter, you haven't read Harry Potter, you watched the movies once, you never watched them at all, whatever. Like, every single person who has any kind of relationship to Harry Potter, including none, can enjoy the show.
It's wonderful. Mike does an excellent job recapping all of the chapters, so even if you haven't picked up the books in a while, or you've never picked up the books at all, you know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, and finally, we have a show called Waystation. Me and Julia and editor Eric, who is now safely back home after his ghost napping.
God.
Thank God. We watch a different episode of the like queer Canadian
supernatural-esque
like monster of the week style TV show Lost Girl, which is on Netflix to binge. Mm-hmm. We watch an episode every 2 weeks and we talk about it, and Julia gives us mythology corner. We critique some wigs.
There's a lot of wigs.
There's a lot of threesome related discussion in last week's episode, and it is super, super fun. We love it a lot. That's called Waystation.
It is great. Check it out.
We got links in those descriptions, yo.
If you want to drink along with this episode or just are wondering what we're drinking, we were drinking some really nice pomegranate martinis, which if you are a $4 patron, it'll arrive in your email at whenever the episode drops. So you can make a drink and listen along.
You don't have to do it at 6 in the morning when we drop the episode.
I mean, you don't, but you can.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
We're not going to tell you what to do.
Your mom's plaque says in her kitchen.
Yes, it does.
And we recommend that you drink along if you're so inclined. Pomegranates in them are amazing. Just like cut it open, put it in a bowl of water, get all the seeds out. Ugh.
I can't believe you just put my mom on blast.
I mean, I think it's a motto to live by.
Okay, yeah. It's a Jimmy Buffett motto. We can live by it. It's fine.
Anyway, thank you all very much for listening. Thank you for talking to us on Twitter. We love it. Thank you for talking to us in our Facebook group. So much fun to share your urban legends, to share your articles, to share your art for Art Meme Friday. And we love you so much.
We do. Are Jimmy Buffett and Warren Buffett related?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. Illuminati confirmed. Enjoy Spirits Podcast, episode 65, Inanna.
We're such nerds.
That's what they come for, Jules.
Amanda, you know the saying, right? All's fair in love and war.
I do.
Yes. I don't even know who said that. Is that a Shakespeare quote?
It is Shakespeare.
Okay. What play is it from?
I think Troilus and Cressida, but I could be wrong. Okay. Or Julius Caesar. I don't know.
I don't know either. It feels almost like a, what's the, you're going to Google it right now. What's the one where it's a war one also in Rome? Coriolanus.
Coriolanus.
Yeah, that seems right. I don't think it is right, but it seems right.
The second, I typed all's F and then the first one was all's fair in middle school. I don't know what that is.
That's probably a middle schooler book. That's what I'm going to guess. Oh, you know, it's probably that like shitty like Diary of a Wimpy Kid kind of thing.
Oh, no. Hold on.
This is a great segue we've made within 2 minutes of us starting.
And I was just going to brag about how we only had 90 seconds of pre-em episode banter for Eric to cut, but that's not true.
Nope. Nope, nope, nope.
Interesting.
What is it?
It comes from Don Quixote.
Really?
Not Shakespeare.
Wouldn't have guessed that.
Would not have guessed. I would have gotten that wrong in HQ.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So much for English and history major. Am I right?
Well, off to a great start.
Doing great. Super punchy. Let's do this. Amanda, I'm curious as to how often you realize that those things surprisingly cross over together in ancient Sumerian mythology.
That I don't know. I mean, proverb-wise, you know, we talk about wars of the heart. We talk about fighting for affection. We mm-hmm. talk about heartbreak, you know, and all of these kind of conquering terminologies.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that they're tied together, but I don't know very much at all about ancient Sumerian mythology.
That's great, because I'm going to tell you about it today.
I bet in about 45 minutes, I'm going to know a lot more.
You will. You will indeed.
I hope so.
So love and war cross over quite a bit for one goddess in particular, and that is the goddess Inanna.
Ooh, I like her name.
Yeah, she's
very
great.
Close to Inara, who is a rogue assassin that I play and join the party.
Plug, plug, plug.
Just saying.
She's also it's great. She's
very
adorable.
Big into fighting and very big into love.
She is indeed. Fair warning in advance, Inanna predated a lot of different cultures, and you might notice some influences that she had on various goddesses that existed before her.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Assyrian goddess Ishtar, the Phoenician Astarte, Aphrodite from Greek mythology, and therefore Venus from Roman.
So these are goddesses that Inanna inspired.
Yes, because she predated them.
Yeah, cool.
And we know how much we love synchronization.
Oh, we super do.
So right off the bat, we know that Inanna is the Sumerian goddess of love, sensuality, fertility, procreation, and of course, war.
You had me till the war.
Yep. Come on.
I know. I'm just saying. Okay. I'm surprised.
Yes.
And I'm curious, and I am here with
and
you.
I'm here for it. In many stories, she is the daughter of Enki, who is the god of wisdom, fresh water, magic, and a bunch of other stuff, depending on the source or time period.
Sounds like Prospero.
Kind of,
yeah.
Since we're on that Shakespeare grind.
I mean, apparently the false Shakespeare grind.
The
which,
false Shakespeare
whatever.
Grind. That's okay. That's a good band name. The false Shakespeare grind.
I know. Because like if you just say with enough authority, like, oh, that comes from Shakespeare. Who's going to say no?
I mean, no one.
I guess a Don Quixote scholar.
Also, you can't remember all of the lines from Shakespeare. There's so many plays and so many lines.
Yeah, he originated so much more than we actually know.
And like a bunch of words and stuff. Anyway, we're getting off track again. So other myths say that Inanna is the daughter of Nanna, who is the god of the moon and wisdom. Personally, I say why not both? Let her have her wisdom dads.
Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. She is said to be the twin sister of the sun god Utu or Shamash, but we're going to focus on Inanna for the most part in this episode.
All right.
You know what we don't talk about enough, Amanda?
The importance of intersectional feminism in modern policy.
I mean, we do talk about that quite a bit on the show.
We do talk about that a lot. We don't talk a lot about the superiority of Belgian beers. That is a hot take. We don't talk a lot about the dismissal that we face when going into cocktail bars and ordering bourbon or like really like junipery gin drinks, and bartenders are like, are you sure? And we're like, try me, motherfucker.
Try me, motherfucker.
What don't we talk about?
That's a good question. Why the gods and goddesses we talk about in our episodes have such a prominent place in their society.
Huh, that's true. Like why they made the cultural selection to become really important.
Right, exactly. Huh. So there are so many gods and goddesses. Why do some only exist in a few stories and then others really, really dominate the storytelling?
Yeah, I guess I really just take it for given, you know, that there's going to be love god, war god, mm-hmm. peace god, wisdom god. And I don't think about why those are the gods that end up representing those things.
Right. So for example, Zeus versus Zephyrus would be a great example. Why is Zephyrus in so few stories, but Zeus is in so many?
Don't know.
That kind of begs the question, why is Inanna, who, you know, becomes at the height of her power and popularity, known as the Queen of Heaven to the Sumerian people, why is she so prominent? Why is she so popular?
Yeah.
And we can thank the work of Enhu Duana, who is an Akkadian poet and high priestess.
Ooh.
So not only was she a badass poet and the daughter of a Mesopotamian king, Sargon of Akkad, but she was the high priestess at the most prominent of the Sumerian temples in the city of Ur.
Oh my god. A, all of these names are just knocking it out of the park. Yeah. These are like, I wanted a graphic novel series about every single one of the characters we met so far. Mm-hmm. And also, is there any bad high priestess? Like, are there any high priestesses who are not fucking badass?
Ooh, okay. So this is going to put me on a whole other tangent. But it's really interesting whenever you have sort of like an evil high priestess character, it's always like a very sexualized woman.
Oh, for sure.
All the time.
Yeah, like so, sex, power, evilness kind of all wrapped up together.
Right. So, and this is like a media thing, but it always implies that because this woman is so sexual, that's how she became like came into power.
Yeah. And also she can't be powerful without also being sexually.
Yeah. Aware. That's some bullshit. And I'm not a fan. Mm-hmm. But we're going to talk about fucking this one because it's amazing.
Okay.
So she becomes insanely important because she's given the responsibility of melding the Sumerian gods with the Akkadian ones after the two kingdoms are united. So in charge of creating stability for the empire based on these two religions coming together.
No pressure.
So Enheduanna combines Inanna with Ishtar and is also this badass because she uses poetry, psalms, and prayer to solidify the worship of the goddess.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't think of a thing that's harder than changing the way and whom, you know, people value. Like saying this thing that you're used to turning to support for, you might have to turn to a different version of that thing or a whole different one altogether. And the ways in which you're used to getting support and solidarity, you know, and peace, we're now going to change. And that is crazy.
Also, we're talking about this revolutionary idea that, hey, in order to worship this goddess who is associated with like sensuality and fertility and also war, we're going to sing songs. We're going to tell poetry about her and like sing her praises literally to the heavens. And that's how she becomes so cemented in the society.
Yeah, right. People remember psalms. They remember song. They remember poems.
Right. And it's like, it's a very unifying thing. Yeah. And as someone who's, you know, studied poetry in college, I'm sure you can talk about sort of the universal experience of poetry and song in storytelling, you know what I mean?
And also as an instructional device. I was a research assistant in college for a professor who focused on recitation, like reading poetry out loud, as a pedagogical tool. So as a way for kids, especially, she focused in Britain, that's where she grew up. Mm-hmm. And so in the UK, really until very recently, memorizing and reciting poetry was like a thing that everybody did. And everyone's parents knew like Rime of the Ancient Mariner, you know, and like various poems. And not only is it like a nation building thing where, you know, like we know the Pledge of Allegiance and we know the state song and whatever, you know, it was just like body of work that everybody was expected to know. And then later in life to be able just to reference, like in the way that we can sling Shakespeare quotes at each other.
Or in the way that you can rap the Raven.
I can. Link in the description.
Yeah, link in the description.
But anyway, her research is so interesting. She actually wrote a book about this, which I'll put in the description as well.
Yes, please.
There's something about the like sing-songy nature of things that are set to meter, things that rhyme especially, where it's just like it's trance-making. And it allows you to cram more stuff into your head than you could if you were just memorizing facts or prose.
Yeah, that's It's so cool. It's one of my favorite like aspects of religious history.
Yeah.
Is the idea of how gods and goddesses were worshipped. And this is such a revolutionary thing at the time. It's
exactly.
really cool.
Yeah. And now it's like, you know, as the rise of free verse and like modernism and stuff, like made poems less kind of traditional, structured, rhymey, mm-hmm. that kind of fell out of favor slowly over the 20th century. But I'd be really curious too, like we hear people quote Bible verses all the time, mm-hmm. and it's always like, you know, a certain number of words, like you can't memorize like a, you know, 100-word Bible passage mm-hmm. as easily. So I'd be really curious to see if listeners know of any like, you know, textual, like linguistic analysis of certain versions of the Bible and how the sentences are chopped up. Like I would posit probably that the sentences are likely shorter than average so that, you know, it can be more like give little units of it for people to remember. And like the quotable portions, I bet are like have a very narrow, like statistical average length. Like I bet they're all kind of very similar.
Yeah. Especially New Testament stuff. I would imagine.
I don't know. Get at us, biblical folks.
So because of Enheduanna, we get some really great stories about Inanna from many ancient Mesopotamian myths.
Yeah, and talk about reasons why we remember her. You know, if they're freaking committed to poetry and song, that's
exactly.
a great way to remember.
Yeah, it's so freaking cool. So the first we're going to tell is the story of Inanna and the Hulupu tree.
Ooh.
Which is adorable. I just like the name.
Hulupu. I love all the names, Julia. 11 out of 10 on the names.
Yeah, they're really good.
I'm at like we rate doggos level on these names.
10 out of 10 wood pet.
Yeah, 13 out of 10 poor boy so pure.
So Enki, the god of wisdom and Inanna's dad, attempts to visit the underworld, which is ruled by Ereshkigal.
Ruh-roh.
Enki's efforts to go to the underworld cause a great storm. Arguably, this is the same flood that we talked about when we talk about the flood in Genesis, or shout out to our first roundup episode, Great Floods.
Great Floods. I was going to mention it earlier, but that's where our first visit to Sumeria was.
Yeah. The result of the storm is a tree that grows besides the Euphrates, which is one of the main rivers and was super important to Mesopotamians.
Yes.
Do you remember the two rivers?
The Tigris and the Euphrates.
Yeah,
baby.
I'm proud of you. You remember your your world history stuff.
Yes, world history, AP World. Shout out to our very hot 8th grade world history teacher. Ninth grade.
With the tattoo on her.
She had a tattoo on her ankle. Mm-hmm. It was mind-blowing.
So this tree that was growing besides the Euphrates is pulled up by the storm. Inanna finds the tree and takes it to her sacred garden to nurture it, hoping that it will grow in size and she can make it into a throne and a bed.
Ooh.
But before the tree can grow to full maturity, three creatures find the garden and make a home out of the tree. A serpent, an Anzu bird, and the dark maid Lilith. And this is the same Lilith from certain Hebrew texts that are supposed to be the first wife of Adam,
yes,
who later in certain Christian and Judean texts will call her the first succubus,
right?
Which is really cool.
Yes, there's a lot
awesome.
Of like,
or vampire depending on the story.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And there's a lot of references to that, like that name is a very popular like vampiric like high horror, I don't know what to call that genre, but like capital R romantic horror.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Very like Cthulhu-esque.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Inanna cries because she cannot get the creatures to leave her tree. But the creatures are obviously not moved by her tears because they're like kind of portrayed as evil.
And can I get a visual on this bird? What kind of bird are we talking? What kind
of
bird?
I'm picturing like an evil version of that big bird from Up.
Oh, good. Okay. I was picturing like a toucan, but grayscale. Don't know why my brain went there. Like the Jungle Book, you know?
Yeah. All right. I could see that. I'm also kind of picturing now the sad phoenix from Harry Potter,
sure.
Which I can't remember the name of, the Augury, I guess, maybe? Or something?
I guess so.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
that sounds about right.
Send us your sketches, people.
Send us your sketches of this creepy bird. So she calls for her brothers for help to remove the beasts, first calling her twin Utu, who refuses to help her. The next person she calls is Gilgamesh, you know, from the epic.
Oh, man. Gilgamesh on speed dial, man.
He puts on armor, takes his axe, and then kills the snake. The Anzu bird and Lilith flee, and Gilgamesh and the men of Uruk take the tree and turn it into a throne and bed for Inanna.
Like chop it down, cut it up, construct those things? Okay, cool.
Like carve it for her.
Wow.
It's dope as hell.
Yeah.
This story actually leads into our next one, which is the story of Inanna and the god of wisdom. Inanna goes to visit the god of wisdom after she has taken her throne. And so if you'll remember correctly, that's Enki, her father.
Yes.
Enki has a servant greet her and invite her to share food with him.
And this is God of the Moon?
No, this is Enki, who is the god of wisdom, fresh water, and magic.
Okay, but just like humanoid type normal?
Yep.
Yeah.
He's a normal type.
I don't know. I was picturing like a man in the moon type face.
I gotcha. No, he's like pretty chill. Enki and Inanna sit down for a drink, and Enki gets more than a little bit drunk.
Ooh, always a great turn in a story.
So he begins bestowing meh powers on Inanna. So in Sumerian mythology, meh is one of the decrees of the gods that is the foundation for basically everything in society. Social institutions, religious practices, technologies, anything that makes civilization civilization.
That reminds me of Sharia in Islam. Like, there's certain things that the Quran says, and then there are certain rules and things that, like, scholars and, you know, faith leaders help you to live your life by over time.
Right, the rules that govern society.
Yeah.
Yes, kind of like the Testaments.
Leviticus?
Like Leviticus, but also the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament.
Sure, yeah. Or, like, all, like, there are Ten Commandments, great, and then there are, like, so many other ways that you can, you know, decide and kind of influence how people
exactly
work.
The Mez were actually collected by the god Enlil, who is the god of wind, earth, and storms.
So he's like a scribe, or like physically bestowed.
They're like physical manifestations. They're power in which the gods are like channeling these things. So Enlil hands these over to Enki. Now Inanna thought Enki was getting a little bit too big with his boots for all this power that he was been given. So Inanna begins complaining to her father that she's been given the short end of the stick when it comes to her divine spheres of influence. At this point, she is the goddess of sexuality and womanhood and nothing else.
I mean, I can see how that would be, like, frowned upon and, like, shoved into a corner.
Yes. So Enki starts giving her the mess, bestowing her with more power. And she's, like, just accepting these set of gifts until Enki has given her all of the powers.
Oh, my gosh. Because he just, like, got drunk and was like, I love you, daughter.
You want the societal structure? Sure. Agriculture? Yeah, you just have it.
Take it.
When Enki finally sobers up, however, Inanna has left and has taken all of the meh with her.
Amazing.
She has sailed back to her garden at this point, accompanied by Ninshabur, who is the messenger goddess and her second in command. Which
I love
is
it.
Great.
I love
her.
I'm just picturing them at like the prow of a ship, you know, just like standing there with the first mate behind her.
Ugh. Yep. So Enki sends servants after her to try to retrieve the meh, but Ninshabur is able to fight them all off.
Hmm.
The two return to her garden in Uruk, and she makes it known that she will bestow the powers of the meh to the mortals that live in the city. So she becomes the benefactress of all mankind by giving them the tools that they need in order to create a civilization.
Is she like the divine source of self-rule?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah. So Enki, understanding that she wasn't going to use all the powers for herself, allows the humans to receive the gifts and calls off his servant from hunting her down.
That is so much more profound than like Prometheus.
Prometheus.
The fire,
you right? Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Hey,
I'm proud of you. That's
thank
good.
You. But like, okay, it's like fire. Great. Thank you. I'm glad for like this foundational tool of society. But someone else to be like, hey, you have the actual divine right to govern this stuff for yourself.
Yeah.
Like that gets at my like democratic bleeding heart, you know?
I know. I understand. It's real good.
So good.
Now, at this point, Inanna is considered a young goddess, so a story about her courtship and marriage is not uncommon.
I thought you were going to say, so she dropped her first EP.
She young did. Goddess. She dropped her first EP. So Utu, the sun god, and her brother, as we talked about before, helps to prepare Inanna for marriage and selecting a mate by assisting her in weaving her bridal sheet.
Cool.
Yeah. Utu also suggests that his sister take Dumuzi as her mate. Inanna has it set in her mind that she wants to marry a farmer, which, like, girl, same.
Oh my god, I know.
But Dumuzi is a shepherd, and she kind of balks at the suggestion that they would make a good match.
Are we going to sing the entirety of The Farmer and the Cowman, or no?
Yes, we are.
One man
likes
pokes
to
a cow
push
with
a plow.
Ease.
The
other farmer steals his butter and cheese.
We just did different lines
we
into
did,
the mic at the same time.
Yes, one man likes to push a plow, the other likes to chase a cow, but that's no reason why they can't be friends. God, I love that song.
Okay, but let's talk about this for a second, because apparently this has something to do with the fact that the Sumerians would argue about land usage. So they would argue, should the land be used by farmers to plant their crops, or should it be used by shepherds to that allow their herds to range over the land?
AKA the background plot of Oklahoma.
Yes. Which also the plot of Oklahoma is, can we be a state now?
Yeah, the plot of Oklahoma is like, everything's uncertain, like relationships and statehood and like industry.
Listen, let's sing. Territory folks should stick together.
Territory folks should all be pals.
Cowboys dance with the farmer's daughters.
Farmers dance with the rancher's gals.
Okay, we're good. Are you okay?
I feel like I could run a marathon right okay. now.
Still, Utu insisted that the two of them should meet, and it does not go well at first.
Oh, no.
They basically go, like, full Much Ado About Nothing. Bring yes. it back to Shakespeare again.
Love it.
They hated each other, they fought, and then they got into each other, and then they get it on. So the
classic tales all this time.
The sex is so good between them, in fact, that the land became more fruitful as a result of their union.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is the best thing I've ever heard.
This also like becomes a thing where the kings of Uruk would establish their legitimacy through a sacred marriage ceremony where the kings would play the role of Dumuzi and then would have sex with the high priestess of Inanna.
I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the, you know, kind of duties of the ruler is to make sure that people can make a living and be fed and stay healthy and that the land is fertile. And so I completely get how they would want to like have all things aligned when they start their rule.
Right. And we also saw that with the Mermaid Queen. We were talking about the Javanese Mermaid Queen.
We did.
All of the lines of kings have this like spiritual and also like vaguely romantic relationship with this goddess.
Yeah. And also kind of the source of power of the grandfather of our Korean rice king.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. my dragon king. My good dragon king.
I know. We like him.
Do you want to go sing some musicals and refill our wine?
Let's do it.
All right.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
All right, Amanda, now that we have our wine again.
We do.
I sang.
I'm all right. Got it out of my system.
I'm glad. I'm really glad. You did a little bit of square dancing. It was very cute.
A little jig.
It was adorable. We talked a little bit about who we would marry from the fucking Oklahoma musical.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not a lot of no's from me.
No.
Probably go with the farmer over the cowman, though.
Yeah, that's fair. I like a good cowboy, though.
I was just going to say, I feel like you would definitely choose cowman. See, yeah. Julie, this is why part of why we're so compatible as best friends, because we never choose the same thing.
Yeah,
that's There's true. Enough for both of us.
There is. There's enough to go around. There's enough Hugh Jackman to go around. So finally, we come across the last and best story of Inanna. The Descent of Inanna, which is told in the form of a poem that was written somewhere between 1900 and 1600 BCE.
Oh my word, that is very old.
Yes. Here are the opening lines.
Okay.
From the great above, she opened her ear to the great below. From the great above, the goddess opened her ear to the great below. From the great above, Inanna opened her ear to the great below.
I'm rapt.
Yes, it's already frankly. Really good.
Yes, it is.
I know you always love a good poem. I try to include poetry whenever I can.
I know. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate it. It's also, like, how do people frame the story? Like, we know now all that there is to know about the goddess, but how do they like to remember her? Mm-hmm. People are like, a story about Inanna. Ooh, you know, like, what is the lens on that story that gets people's, like, little arm hair standing up, you know?
It's all for you, babe. It's all for you. So Inanna starts the story dressed to the nines. The crown of heaven is on her head. Beads are around her neck. She's wearing a breastplate, golden rings, and is carrying a scepter.
Great start. Sidebar, can we just discuss how whenever you look at Egyptian and Sumerian and Persian jewelry in museums, you're like, yeah, I would wear that.
I would wear all of it.
Isn't it amazing how human beings have been like, yep, that's how you do it. That's how you adorn an ear. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah,
I'm into it.
Ugh, so good.
She is about to enter the underworld, and Ninshabar is by her side. side, and she tells the messenger goddess how to come to her aid if she fails to return when expected.
Oh, good. Like, if I don't come back in 24 hours, call the cops.
Yeah.
All right.
So Inanna then knocks loudly and demands entrance to the underworld. Neti, who is the chief gatekeeper, asks who she is, and she answers, I am Inanna, queen of heaven.
Whoa. Just such an image, you know? Like, standing there, scepter, beads, bracelets, fucking dress, like, hands on hips, you know, looking up at the gates of the underworld.
Bitch, this is who I am. Ugh. I love it. So when Neti asks why she wishes to enter the land, quote, from which no traveler returns, Inanna answers, because my older sister, Erish Kagal, her husband, Gugulana, the bull of heaven, has died, and I come to witness the funeral rites.
Oh.
So Neti's a little nervous about this because it's not every day that the Queen of Heaven comes to the underworld to observe a funeral.
Yeah, and is that where the funeral rites are traditionally done, or are they done like on the mortal coil?
No, they would be done in the underworld, and because Gugulana is the husband of Erish Kagal, so his funeral service would be overseen by her.
I see.
Neti tells Inanna to stay where she is while he goes talk to his boss, Erish Kagal.
Makes sense, makes sense.
And Erish Kagal is not pleased about the news of her sister being there because it's revealed later that Inanna is responsible for Gugulana's death because she sent him against Gilgamesh after Gilgamesh rejected Inanna's sexual advances.
Okay, this is a bit of a sticky situation, and I understand it.
Erish Kagal tells Neti to bolt the seven gates of the underworld against Inanna, but then to let her in one gate at a time, requiring that Inanna remove one of her royal garments at each gate.
I love this idea so much. I want it in a graphic novel.
Yep.
Like the person emerging with just the freaking clothes that she wore, like just the fabric on her back and none of the finery, and yet a goddess despite it all. Ugh.
So Inanna does what is asked of her, but demands an answer as to why she is to suffer the indignity as she strips off her clothing.
Sure.
Neti responds, quiet, Inanna. The ways of the underworld are perfect. They may not be questioned.
Ooh. As Catholics, we are just, yep.
Yep.
Fair enough.
So Inanna makes it through the gates and enters the throne room of Erish Kagal naked and bowing low.
Whew.
She approaches the throne and then something happens. The Anuna, the judges of the underworld, surround her and pass judgment on her.
Wow.
And then her sister Erish Kagal looks at Inanna with, quote, the eye of death and strikes Inanna down with death.
And kills her?
Yep. Inanna's corpse is then hung from a hook on the wall of the throne room.
Wow, this is some serious vengeance, my dude.
Well, I mean, if someone sent your husband to die over, like, her, someone not, like, wanting to date her.
Now, wait, did she send the husband to, like, avenge her upon Gilgamesh? Or did she send him to, like, die instead of Gilgamesh somewhere?
No, she sent him against Gilgamesh, but because Gilgamesh was a great hero, he slaughtered him.
Obby, right.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm having some, like, weighing of the feather, you know, Egyptian sort of
vibes
here.
Interestingly, there's a lot of cross-pollination between ideas of the underworld in Sumerian mythology or Mesopotamian mythology and Egyptian mythology.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, they're both very physical underworlds.
Yeah.
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 Which is interesting, like Mesopotamian mythology or underworld as shown in the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's really interesting. The dead eat dirt and wear feathers.
Hmm.
Like that's the description of the underworld.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really weird. Meanwhile, Ninshabar is waiting 3 days and 3 nights for Inanna to return. But when she does not, the messenger goddess rushes to Enki for help. Enki gives her 2 servants known as Gala, who
Enki's are... Enki's like, I got no power left, but here's some servants.
No, he still has power, he's you know, he just doesn't have the meh anymore. So Enki gives her 2 servants known as Gala, who are androgynous demons, to help Ninshabar return Inanna to Earth.
Aesthetic androgynous demons. Get at me. I want to just search that Tumblr tag right now.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So the Gala enter the underworld and attach themselves to Erish Kagal, who's apparently in labor at this point.
Oh, Jesus.
It's weird because the way that they talk about it in the story, it's implied that she's in labor, but it's not outright said. Like, she's in pain. She's in a position one would be in when they give birth, like, on her back with her legs up.
Huh.
It's really, really interesting. But they don't explain why or how. And they don't really discuss the, like, after effects of this.
Do you think it was somewhat of a like societal propriety, like we don't really discuss these kinds of things,
right,
or more of a like, this is a person in power and they're in a vulnerable state and we're just kind of going to allude to that?
I think that I honestly don't know. It could go either way.
Yeah. I'm curious if any people who have studied Sumerian history and culture have a take on that.
I bet Jim does.
Shout out to Jim.
Shout out to Jim.
Who always brings the facts and the humor, man, and the puns. Jim and Thea tweeting on Myth Chat Monday is honestly like the highlight of my week.
You're just my favorite thing in the world. Did you see Jim in our Facebook group? Someone was asking for D&D suggestions for like,
oh, I did,
cryptid-based summer camp stuff.
Yep.
Jim and Eric just came the fuck out with answers for that, and it was great.
Yeah, if you're not in our Facebook group, we're at facebook.com/groups/spiritspodcast, or
it's,
you can just search
so
for us.
Much fun.
It is so much fun. People tell their urban, like if you sent us an email, go back into your sent folder, copy the email and paste it into our Facebook group. People are gonna love it.
Mm-hmm. It's really, really good. Anyway, sorry. So the Gala sympathize with the queen's pains and she offers them a gift for their empathy. The Gala respond, it's a good tactic. Yeah. The Gala respond that they wish for the corpse and Erish Kigal gives it to them without question.
I hope a resurrection's in order.
But the Gala then revive Inanna with food and water of life, which, huh, I think that they got from Enki, but I can't remember,
I would assume,
exactly.
Yeah, or her garden somewhere.
Yeah. As we learned from the story of Persephone, though, someone who has wound up in the underworld cannot easily leave it.
Yeah.
Someone had to take Inanna's place in the underworld, and the Gala leave her at the entrance so that they might find a substitute for her on Earth.
Fair enough.
First, they try to take Nunchibar, then Inanna's sons, Shara and Lula, and even her beautician, Kara. Which
like
is great that she has a beautician.
Around. Yeah, they're like, who's closest to us? Who lives in the mansion?
I kind of love that a goddess has a beautician.
I love it so much.
It's so cool. I love it so much.
Like, okay. She's so much of a person. Like, she, yeah, like, ages. She goes through phases of her life. She's, like, romantic in the knot. She has, like, physical needs. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's really great. But Inanna prevents any of them from being taken because they are all in mourning clothes when the Gala come for them.
Oh.
But then the Gala come upon Inanna's husband, Muzi.
Uh-oh.
And find that he is dressed in shining garments and sitting on his magnificent throne.
My dude.
And Inanna is pissed. And has the demon seize him.
Oh my gosh.
So Dumuzi appeals to Utu for help and is transformed into a snake in order to escape, but eventually is caught and carried away to the underworld. Dumuzi's sister, Geshtinana, volunteers herself to go in Dumuzi's place and is decreed that Dumuzi would spend half of the year in the underworld and Geshtinana would spend the other half. And yes, this is how the Sumerians explained why seasons happen.
I mean, good sister. And also I'm digging the vibes here.
Yeah. And then Inanna is able to return to the world of the living.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's like, that's a return that isn't without consequences. And we've talked before about how much I love systems of magic that have really physical components of like we are transforming energy from a source into a different form.
Yeah.
Like in the Dresden Files, like in The Magicians, as problematic as that book is, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's also just really good senses of like magic is like a physical exertion.
Yeah. And you love like a good alchemy too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Jinx. But I love that this return from death leaves its mark on you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love a goddess who has a story arc, who grows as the mythology is told. You know what,
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, because you said that she was kind of early in some of those stories, like a maiden, you know, pre-marriage,
yeah,
getting her powers. Like, it's a whole comic book arc. I mentioned,
yeah,
at the start kind of a graphic novel, and I've been thinking about that the whole time, that she has an origin story, and she, mm-hmm, has a plot arc, and she is, you know, redeemed by her friends at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because I think the reason that we get so much of this is because of her patron, because of her poetry-telling high priestess.
Oh,
the reason,
gosh,
that we're able to tell these stories and remember them and have them accounted for is because of one woman's work. How cool is that?
That is so incredible, especially when like the story of history is a story of like men who have dominated other cultures, you,
mm-hmm,
know, to have this whole narrative that was shaped and archived, you know, by a woman is so incredible.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite stories exactly for that reason.
Yeah.
Because it feels modern in its telling almost because of how human Inanna feels in the stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't feel like this was a story that was told in 1900 BCE. You know what I mean?
Yeah, truly. I mean, in some of the ways, like you describe some of the, you know, again, we're theater kids. So we studied like the mystery plays and we studied like ancient Greek theater. And in some of those, it's like, okay, well, like get at themes like love and loss and murder and, you know, usurping the throne.
Human
whatever.
Experiences.
Yes. But they're sort of like the archetypes of human experiences. Mm-hmm. And we don't really get into the like individual character driven, like I identify with someone else's specific story and not the like archetype of that story until like post-Freudian, you know, kind of texts in the 19th and 20th centuries. And so to see something that is so old and also so like an individual experience, like she isn't like the ideal of beauty, right? Or the ideal of strength or has the ideal marriage. Like she didn't want her spouse. They like had an argument. They had a time. They like had certain chemistry and not other kinds of chemistry. And, you know, they have ups and downs. And like, that is so much more relatable than a kind of platonic, idyllic, you know, shape or outline of a thing.
Yeah, no, I love this story for all of its faults. And, you know, it's you don't get a story where the god feels so human very often. And it's wonderful. And it's I'm just so glad to be able to tell it to you, Amanda, and to tell it to our listeners.
I know. And thank you for choosing a story with poetry in it for me.
Always.
I love the images. I love all the clothing. I love that she had a staff beautician. Incredible.
It's great.
So good. Man, Sumeria. Really underappreciated in our historical education, at least.
Well, I'm glad we were able to tell it. Don't get stuck in the underworld.
Think when you go on a date with somebody, this is a farmer or a cowman.
And stay creepy.
And stay cool.
Spirits was created by Amanda McLaughlin, Julia Schaffini, and Eric Schneider, with music by Kevin McLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Keep up with all things creepy and cool by following us on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and Instagram at Spirits Podcast. We also have all our episodes, collaborations, and guest appearances, plus merch on our website, spiritspodcast.com.
Come on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, for all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff. Throw us as little as $1 and get access to audio extras, recipe cards, director's commentaries, and patron-only live streams.
And hey, if you like the show, please share us with your friends. That is the best way to help us keep on growing.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.